WISE Awards are back for 2024 and early bird entries are still open. These awards recognise the best use of digital media, marketing and commerce, and they also celebrate innovation and expertise right across the digital marketing industry. There are more categories than ever before to enter, so visit exchangewire.com/events to find out more.
The MarTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to the MadTech Podcast. My name is Lindsay Rowntree and I am CEO at ExchangeWire. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Broughton, Research Leader at ExchangeWire. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Lindsay. Great to be here.
Great to have you here. Feels like you and I haven't done one of these for a while.
I know. It's been many moons.
Yeah, I'm excited to have your weird Mattisms brought back in Gate. Brilliant. Oh, Can't wait.
I've got a couple prepared. Don't you worry.
I knew you would do. And our special guest today is Ollie Ollock, who is CRO at Opti Digital. Hello, Ollie.
Hey, Lindsay. Hey, Matt. Nice to be here and excited to be on the podcast. I've listened to quite a few myself.
Brilliant. Good. Always good to have a listener as a guest. Before we kick into things, tell me a little bit about Opti Digital and what you guys do.
Yeah, thank you. So Opti Digital has been around for 7-8 years. It was initially formed in France. We have a very strong presence in Europe, so France and Spain. We've initially moved into new markets, focusing on the UK, having now got a strong foothold in the UK, and now also moving into the US. We focus on publisher-first sort of engagements, looking at publishers, whether they need products. Our products are standalone ad tech products, so we're not trying to shoehorn any publisher into accepting a whole range of products, but you know, we truly act as a pure ad tech vendor. That's exactly how we see ourselves. So we have a product for dynamic floor pricing called OptiYield, which clients can use, and for UPRs, we have a second product which is called OptiEngage, which is an SSP which focus on measuring engagement and highly viewable ads, which is obviously a hot topic at the moment. And then we have also a wrapper solution, which can be delivered as a full revenue service and also as a standalone SaaS product.
Brilliant. So it'd be great to obviously get your perspective on the kind of the publisher side of things when we go through our stories today. And I'm going to kick that off now. So our first story is that a new report from Juniper Research shows that ad tech spend is set to hit $43.5 billion globally by 2029, which represents a 60% growth over the next 5 years. In the short term, ad tech platforms are expected to make a $24 billion in 2024 alone, which obviously is no small number. The report examines some of the key drivers of this growth, as well as the challenges facing the market. One driver in particular was the need to improve audience targeting to increase engagement. Privacy and data management also featured, with the research finding that rising consumer privacy concerns mean that more privacy-conscious data collection methods and increased transparency around collection analysis are required. So, Ollie, I want to come to you first and get your thoughts on this. You know, is this a positive news story for ad tech? Is ad tech back in business? And what do you think about some of the potential drivers of where that growth could come from?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, on first glance, it does seem rather optimistic. But I think what we need to do is take a really good lie of the land and see where this data has come from. So First thing that I would say is, look, we've just come out of a pandemic, right? And then on the back of that, especially my experience in ad tech and programmatic, those, you know, the 2 years that followed after that was a bit of a lull. It was quite flat. So what are we actually comparing those numbers to? Firstly, especially when you've had such a significant downturn, you know, there's good grounds to be optimistic, but the numbers should be good, right? When we look at the survey, what we're basically seeing is, you know, all the major players are involved. We've got Meta, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, you know, so their numbers are going to be really promising anyways. But I also think what's quite interesting was there's quite a few other players that are quite aggressive in the market in terms of mergers and acquisitions as well. So when you're looking at all those players, they're going to be predicting positive growth. Mm. So that's one thing we need to think about. And what is it actually saying for ad tech? I mean, what I think is positive, it includes tools and ad tech solutions as well, which is obviously a growing area, especially on your point about privacy, you know, led solutions and obviously the growth of AI within ad tech. So I think that's a promising point and a good reason to be positive. But when we look at the drivers, we know that CTV is obviously now the new video and has been for quite some time. So we know that CTV is expectations within the US have already exceeded targets. I think there's 30 billion spend by the end of 2024. And when you're looking at Europe, that's starting to go stronger, around 3 to 4 billion as well. So we're seeing compounded growth in those markets. So that's going to give us good reason to be positive. But I also think when you think about retail media now, when you look at retail players, I mean, in the US, you look at Walmart becoming an advertising powerhouse. We're looking at the likes of Tesco here in the UK doing something very similar. So I think advertising spend in those areas is going to grow, and they've all come along with new enhanced digital strategies on how to grow that. So I think that's a positive. But just to touch upon the other point, I think AI, when we look at what automation's doing within ad tech, you know, having more efficient campaign management, having audience segmentation being done, the way that CDPs, you know, customer data platforms, are, the data is being processed in that manner, I think all of that is going to lead to better efficiencies and exceeding targets again in spend. So I think all of that is positive. So definitely for sure. And, you know, even with Opti, what we're doing, we're using AI in our own technology. So when it comes to dynamic floor pricing, we use AI and automation to help set things up and to get us excellent results in what we do. So Opti Yield uses AI for sure. So that's important. I think also, and I'm sure we'll touch upon it again and again, is, you know, privacy. You know, now that the dust is kind of settling on that and we're seeing how people want to move into, you know, more privacy-led solutions. But I think also now that we have a kind of like direction, so to speak, as to what we know is going to be happening going forward for the short-term future, I think, you know, spending that will now have more of a positive effect. People will settle back down again on that, and that will lead to short-term positive success as well.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you see those kinds of potential growth numbers, as you said, it needs looking into, and the main players are, as expected, the key ones that are coming forward. So do you look at that and think, oh, okay, big tech wins? Or do you look at that and think, okay, players like me, players like Opti Digital, actually have a chance here, as long as we can get all these ducks in a row?
Yeah, I was actually going to do that comparison as well. So from my point of view, we continue to grow, albeit at a very healthy and successful rate. But, you know, we noticed more than anything a slowdown rather than a downturn.
Right.
So
yeah.
Definitely we saw that, but we're growing at a good rate, and we continue to keep on growing, and we expect to grow next year, especially in the new markets that we're entering.
Brilliant.
So we've definitely seen a growth from our side. So like I said, if we scratch beneath the surface, we do see, you know, positive trends for us. But, you know, I think that report is slightly skewed to the larger players.
Yeah, of course. And what are the markets you're moving into? Like, what markets do you see growth opportunities occurring?
Yeah, for sure. So right now we've well established now into the UK, and we're making prominent moves to enter the US market as well, with both, you know, with all three of our products.
Interesting. Yeah. And so, Matt, I want to come to you next, and kind of, you know, your head is often buried in numbers and analysis, and you have a really good kind of grasp from that perspective of what's happening in the ad tech industry. What were your thoughts when you saw this report? Were you thinking, yep, brilliant, this is really good opportunity here, or there's a lot of things that need to come together to actually make this realistic?
Yeah, I agree with Ollie in the sense that it's a bullish report, there are good stories to take away from it, but I'd say it's definitely more on the over-optimistic side. The 60% growth amounts to a 10% compound average growth rate, which would put it, you know, in comparison to figures from Stern, it would place it in the top third of all monitored segments, which is obviously a very optimistic viewpoint considering the challenges that the industry faces, which I think the report did touch upon, but it was, you know, it skirted over them a little bit too much. Obviously, we've got, you know, cookie deprecation. Obviously, yes, it's going to a user choice-led model rather than Google outright deprecating it, but it's still a deprecation. And that's going to amount to a fundamental shift to how many ad tech businesses operate. And there's also the ongoing, not necessarily crises, but volatility in things like news publishing with brand safety concerns. There's scrutiny in terms of third-party data brokers as to the quality of the data they have. You know, subscription blindness. Obviously, we've seen the likes of Warner Brothers Discovery struggling in the past few quarters. Their quarterly financials have been quite massive in terms of the negative numbers. So yeah, there are challenges that industry is facing. They're not insurmountable challenges, but yes, I think it's definitely not going to be quite as strong growth as expected. Brian Weezer at Madison & Wall, he's forecasting just a 7.2% growth in the US this year. So if we're, you know, assuming that the likes of China are going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting to get it to this 10% growth rate, that obviously throws in some regulatory concerns if the US decides actually we want to either impose more tariffs or restrictions on trading with China. Especially, we've obviously had ongoing stories in the past with the likes of Shein and Temu in terms of regulatory scrutiny on there. But yeah, I think it's definitely not the industry is actually going to shrink. I just think the growth is going to be slow and steady. But actually, that's probably no bad thing. We don't want a boom and bust cycle. We've seen in terms of, say, the likes of the gaming industry coming out of the pandemic, where now they've had a much more of a shock as such, and we're seeing lots of studio closures, layoffs, etc. So I think slow and steady in this case will win the race.
And to both of you, I'm interested in your perspectives on whether some of the things that are being classed as drivers by this research that you could also argue are industry challenges, and you've both touched upon them, so transparency, brand safety, privacy. There's also a whole thing around measurement as well, you know, with the whatever the future of the cookie looks like, regardless of what Google's doing, should be moving away from it, et cetera, et cetera. Are you seeing opportunities there for existing ad tech, but also new ad tech to come in and help fix these problems to try to achieve that growth rate?
Yeah, I mean, I touched upon it earlier. I think that the scope of the project actually says it's about tools and technologies and solutions that are included. So I think we're seeing that. I think also harnessing the general view of other ad tech providers in the marketplace, and especially with, you know, the announcements of what's happening with deprecation of the cookie, everyone is trying to move towards a privacy-led solution, or more of a publisher signal based solution rather than people based solutions. So I think that's going to be moving in that direction. So from that point of view, you know, and this is the wonderful thing about ad tech, there's always going to be some bright spark out there that will find a solution.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, anything to add?
Yeah, no, just to agree on that. I think in terms of, we've seen a lot of announcements in the past, I'd say 2-3 months, of companies coming together, collaborating to try and solve these challenges that are flagged. And again, to Ollie's point, the M&A environment in ad tech has been very healthy over the past quarter. So yeah, it's signs of positivity, signs of growth. But yeah, those challenges do need to be addressed. But it's obviously great to see the industry coming together and companies collaborating to find new and innovative solutions to these issues.
Brilliant. So taking this as a win, lots of challenges, but lots of opportunities to actually solve them and come together to solve them, which is the most important thing to drive continued growth. And as Ollie said, reiterating, you know, we talked about the opportunity, but more generally, it's a slowdown, not a downturn. And that's kind of, that's okay. We can cope with that rather than the boom and bust that you mentioned, Matt. So yes, on that note, I'm going to bring us on to our next story, which, surprise, surprise, is Google related. So Yelp has filed a lawsuit against Google, alleging that Google has abused its dominance in general search to gain an unfair advantage in local search services. So Yelp CEO Jeremy Stoppelman, which is a great name, by the way, claims that Google prioritizes its own products and services in search results, which negatively impacts competitors like Yelp. The lawsuit seeks monetary damages and an order for Google to stop these alleged anti-competitive practices. Yelp claims Google has created a monopoly in its inferior local search services by prioritizing its own local search results. And according to Yelp, this has damaged competition and diminished the quality of local search services. Yelp reckons that the way Google directs users towards its own local search vertical from its general search engine results page is an illegal combination of separate products to prevent competitors from scaling. Yelp's complaint also includes accusations that Google has been stealing information from Yelp's website and passing it off as its own. The legal action follows a recent ruling by a federal judge that Google violated US antitrust laws, ruling it an illegal monopolist, which could pave the way for more lawsuits against the tech giant. So Matt, I'm going to come to you first. Yelp have obviously, you know, been one of Google's harshest critics for a very long time, and Google's legal woes are continuing. Did Yelp have a case here? What are your thoughts on this?
To me, this feels like Yelp had this lawsuit ready to go pretty much regardless of what the Google search
trial.
Totally
agree. Yeah, they've been sitting on this for a while.
Yes, it was ready to go. And while it, you know, it does feel great to be able to say Google is a monopolist without having to add any allegedly fluff around it, I think Yelp took that headline and maybe took it a bit too much to heart, in the sense that in his ruling, Judge Amit Mehta specifically ruled that specialist vertical providers, including local providers such as Yelp, and he referenced them many, many times throughout his ruling, that they were not unduly impacted by Google's monopoly in the general search market. Whether that's right or wrong, indeed he said that actual data showing harm to these SVPs was entirely absent, which obviously undermines Yelp's case rather strongly there.
Is this why Yelp has gone so hard on the local search in their claim? Because if there's no ruling against them being affected generally, them going so hard on local means that they can try and find a case where there isn't one.
Yeah, I think this is the case of them trying to get either some compensation, and I think they have had, you know, a case in the past where I think it was demonstrated that Google was taking elements from their reviews. Obviously, that was ruled on in the past, I think 2012 off the top of my head. And maybe it's them actually trying to bring the local search more back into things. But, you know, looking at it from an overall perspective, legal cases like this aren't necessarily helpful, in the case that obviously precedent is so important in law. And to, you know, put this case forward before the judges have even decided on any punishment Google will face for its proven monopolistic actions in the general search market, it just throws a bit of a spanner into the works, which could undermine both cases. For example, if the case was to go against Yelp, it could weaken the US's argument to unspin elements of Google's search business. But what I would say, in, you know, devil's advocate in Yelp's defense, is that it's probably a reflection of the lack of faith in general antitrust action over the past two decades. And, you know, it has, you know, had cases go for it and obviously not seen any meaningful action in terms of Google either incorporating Yelp reviews or paying for Yelp to feature reviews as part of Google Maps as a potential. And I think where there's, you know, current clamors on both sides of the Republican-Democrat split in the US to water down antitrust action, they may have just thought, you know what, this is the only opportunity we're going to have. Let's file this lawsuit now, because further down the line, if action against Google gets watered down, we're still left with not much in the pie.
Interesting. Ollie, your perspectives. Is this, does Yelp have a case here, or are they just muddying the waters for the wider Google trial?
I think from listening to Matt's perspective, I think he's hit the nail on the head with quite a few points. I think they've definitely been waiting around. I think this CEO of Yelp's been crying about this for quite a few years. And I think just with the judge ruling, I think they've tried to strike while the iron's hot. For the various reasons that Matt's suggested. But I think what is really interesting for me, I think this just generally displays Google's fuzziness and vagueness when it comes to algorithms in general.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the first time we've kind of seen this. You know, I experienced this, you know, this general vagueness on a few occasions. But, I mean, the thing that comes to mind quite recently is the impact on publishers with the SEO algorithms.
Yeah.
You know, traffic just fell off a cliff, you know, overnight with no warning and no explanation. You know, it's just this vagueness of what goes on. And it's not just even there, you know, what they've been doing with price floors and not showing, you know, or communicating to all people's or all parties that have been involved in the process and in auctions and where have you. You know, it's just, you know, it's very, very shady or very, very vague, shall we say. And we never really see the true impact and have the clarity on what exactly is it. So I think that's what this suggests to me, is if the algorithms are very vague and fuzzy. That's the way I'll put it.
Yeah. And do you think with Yelp doing this, we're going to see others try and do the same thing?
100%. I think this is it. I think definitely people are jumping onto the bandwagon with this one. And, you know, as Matt suggested, of what's happening in the US, you know, I think this whole movement of what might be happening with the elections and antitrust,
it's
a time to get involved. And so I think we'll see more and more of these come out of the woodwork.
And I'm also interested in both your perspectives on, we had Erin Williams from CNN over in Australia on the podcast last week, and she did a bit of a call to arms to publishers to say, look, listen, like I'm fully aware of the plight publishers are in, and it's very, very difficult for us, but we can't just keep blaming everyone around us. At some point, we have to also take responsibility, try and find ways of evolving and try and find ways of doing business differently if, you know, it's not evolve or die necessarily, but if these big tech companies are going to keep doing what they're doing, we can't afford to keep complaining about it. We can to a degree, but we also have to take action to try and do things differently. Do you both agree with that perspective? And, you know, should Yelp be sort of going, okay, right, well, Google have done this to our business. This is how we evolve, or we do die, or we try and get Google to court and maybe lose.
Yeah, I would say it's publishers definitely do need to think about alternatives. Obviously, we've seen, you know, over the last decade, 15 years, we've seen the likes of the great video craze with Facebook, and obviously publishers working quite closely with Google in terms of the news output, and then actually realizing, oh, Google doesn't really care about news and they just want to keep people on the search pages. This is our content. And I think there is a big danger, I think, especially in terms of obviously generative AI. You see the deals that some publishers are striking with the likes of OpenAI and other AI platforms. And it's a case of, are you really going to be seeing the benefit of that? Yes, it's a few, you know, I think Reddit was like 50 million or something like that, wasn't it? And it's just like, you're allowing your entire content to get scraped, which is your entire business, and putting that through a third-party platform. And OpenAI is obviously, you know, got a significant stake from Microsoft in it. There's talk about Apple investing in it. There's obviously Google with their AI platforms that they've invested in. And yeah, it's going through a third party. But ultimately, if you're giving the house away, why are you know, complaining about revenues? So I think there does need to be a bit more of a strong action from publishers on that front. And yeah, in terms of especially in terms of the general search providers, DuckDuckGo off the top of my head, now that they have got, you know, that wonderful statement, Google is a monopolist, that's, I think, the real opportunity to, you know, really go hard in terms of lawsuits, especially if punitive action from the US isn't necessarily as strong as hoped.
Yeah, interesting perspectives there. And Ollie, I want to get your thoughts as well, because obviously, you know, you work very closely with publishers and with your revenue hat on. Do you think that publishers have a case here, or they should be trying to focus on new ways of doing business?
Yeah, my feelings on this are, it really depends on the size of the publisher.
Yeah.
I think that's a key thing here. You know, the likes of CNN and Yelp can turn around and, you know, stand up ever so slightly in these matters. But when you are dependent on revenue, when you're a mid-sized publisher, you know, and you're in that kind of tier two sort of area where you're not quite as big as a tier one, but you are dependent on revenues from advertising, what would you do? Do you know, and would you try and chuck a whole load of money at trying to fight something, or would you bow and bend and try and do the best that you can to survive? So I think that's quite an important point. Definitely some of the publishers that we work with, even though we work with very large tier one publishers, you know, would be probably frightened to hell to get involved in something like that. And wouldn't even consider it. So I think it depends very much on that. But going back to Matt's point, yeah, you know, OpenAI, I think I saw very recently, Perplexity coming up against Google as well.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it's good to have some level of competition in the space.
Definitely. I totally agree. Competition is very, very healthy. On that note, I'm going to move us on to our third story of the week, which is focusing on what the non-cookieless future is set to look like. So Google has obviously hogged the headlines 2024, not least because they delayed the U-turn on deprecating third-party cookies. But what does that decision and the recent monopoly ruling and the upcoming antitrust trial mean for Google and the wider ad tech industry? How do you think it's going to impact the ad tech industry? As per a recent article on Exchange Wire, looking at what's in store for the industry, some of the most common observations are that whatever happens with Google, it shouldn't change the path of moving away from cookies. And it allows for privacy to become even more of a focus than it ever has been before. So I'm going to come to you first, Ollie. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, will the industry still concentrate on privacy given the lack of deprecation? The cookie still exists. Should we be moving away from it? Should we be still using it? Like, where do you sit on this?
Yeah, again, I think this is something that's not taken anybody by surprise. I mean, at least not major players. I think there's a collective sigh of relief on some sides. And I think also there's a certain amount of frustration on the other side, depending on whether or not you came prepped for a cookie-less future. You know, I spent the last couple of years talking to several publishers about how they were preparing for a cookieless future. And I would say the majority were quite unprepared in general. So I think some people are going to be quite happy then, you know, there's this slightly more relaxed approach. Some people were coming up to me and saying that it's going to be a second in see moment, see what we do. We at Opti were very well prepared for the future proofing of, you know, of a cookieless future. We had done several tests with several tech vendors and, you know, several ID solutions. We're able to get, you know, comparable results on other browsers compared to Chrome when it came to monetization. And so we were quite well set for it. And I think there's also going to be a small amount of people that generally don't care what happens because they've not been using third-party cookies for a long time.
Yeah, that's so true.
Do you know? And, you know, I can cite several large publishers that, you know, have not been using third-party cookies and because of their sheer size, you know, have very nice curated audience and segments. So with that all said, I think it's going to be really interesting to see whether Google's decision is actually genuinely influenced by market feedback or antitrust issues, first and foremost. And I think we also need to think about whether or not it's actually going to really change the landscape. I mean, quite a significant amount of the open web doesn't use third-party cookies.
No.
Right? And, you know, we kind of all seem to forget that. But also I think the ICO has made a very sound recommendation, which is to continue with privacy-led solutions. And I think we're all going to try to adhere to and listen to what the market is saying, that everyone is going to try and follow that route. But I think what is going to be important is for publishers and their perspective is that they focus on relevant addressability solutions, which is something that we've been doing, and, you know, not try to put 50 plus solutions on the page because that's just not going to solve anything. You know, it's not going to help from, you know, page speed loads or core web vitals or several things that publishers need to worry about and focus on. And also I think another interesting point to say is that, you know, people and signals are going to be on the decline now, you know? So I think 60, 70% of the people of the audience already are masking their profile data as it goes. So how much of a impact is it going to make from a revenue perspective? I think that's something that, you know, we don't really know for sure.
No, that's so true. And you obviously mentioned that, you know, Opti, you've been prepared for a cookieless future for a long time. And, you know, were you disappointed by the kind of collective sigh of relief that occurred when Google announced they were not going to deprecate third-party cookies?
I was predicting it. If anyone had listened to me talk or rant about this, I've seen this before when it came to GDPR. you know, I was like, this isn't going to happen. You know, and everyone was going, oh, they've already started with 1%. I was politely laughing and saying, yeah. Let's see what happens. But I think it has been a seismic movement over the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, I remember being at the initial roundtables when ID solutions were being introduced, you know, at events. I think this is going to be a slow juggernaut that does move. But I think, you know, Google's played the blinder. They've now put the onus on audience to opt in or opt out or let Privacy yeah. Sandbox do what it wants to do. So they've almost kind of put their hands up and pushed responsibility away. So I think what we will see is a gradual decline and third-party cookies being another player within a set of solutions. And I think that's probably the way that it will go. But, you know, a lot of people make a lot of money on third-party cookies.
That they do. Absolutely. Matt, I want to get your thoughts on this. Do you agree with Ollie? You know, we're looking at maybe like an oil tanker rather than a speedboat in terms of how quickly we're going to see changes here.
Yeah, I completely agree with Ollie on a fair load of that point. You know, user-led deprecation is still a deprecation. And obviously, I think initially it may be, you know, as extreme, if not more so, than Apple's, you know, rollout of Do Not Track, because we're not exactly clear on what the opt-in versus opt-out messaging will be. Obviously, if we're using GDPR compliant cookie notices as a proxy, then open web addressability could fall as low as 9%, which is obviously, if you're over-reliant on the third-party cookie, you haven't been preparing for a cookie-less future, that's obviously going to, you know, that's going to sting. We've obviously got the promising growth areas within commerce, media and CTV, coming back to that first story. But we've got to be careful as an industry not to kill the geese that lay the golden eggs in that regard. You can't have commerce media becoming a retargeting 2.0. And CTV, it does have to address some quality issues. There's obviously an increase in fraud on CTV platforms going on at the moment. There's continued ad podding issues, which means I'm still getting served the exact same ad over and over again.
Do not even get me bloody started on this. Yep. And I could rant for hours.
Obviously, you know, you've got the likes of the new streaming players and they're supposed to be lovely and high quality. I don't need two Peppa Pig adverts when watching the Grand Tour on Amazon Prime. Thank you very much.
Do you need one? Amazon.
I don't even need one. I don't have children. I have no need for any Peppa Pig merchandise. Thank you very much. But I'm still served it. So happy days for that. I think wider in terms of the industry, I think there's likely or potentially should be a shift from that, you know, extreme performance focus of the last few years to a more balanced approach between upper and lower funnel tactics. And hopefully that will just lead to a greater focus on quality environments, particularly news broadcasting, which has obviously been hit in the last few years by overzealous brand safety focuses, even though actually if you look at research, audiences trust adverts and advertisers that market against news stories. You don't need to block, you know, articles relating Manchester due to terrorism attacks that took place years and years ago. There's a great story that head of content John Still flagged in terms of the a lot of content around the Paris Olympics and the recent Euro tournament that is being blocked because of the word shoot, which obviously when talking about football is obviously a lot more different to something you would be more hesitant to advertise against. So yeah, I think there's positives to take out from this. But yeah, we've got work to do as an industry on addressing issues.
And Ollie, I want to come back to you. Kind of, you know, you talked about the sort of the medium-sized publishers earlier, looking at the mid to long-tail publishing industry that, you know, you could argue have been heavily reliant on the likes of Google and the big tech platforms to help drive engagement and drive traffic, but also heavily reliant on the third-party cookie because they haven't got the scale like some of the big tier one publishers you mentioned earlier have to be able to kind of not, you know, say we're going to shun this and we're going to go after first-party data only. How do you foresee them being able to make that shift and kind of what's your role in helping them be able to wean themselves off the reliance on the third-party cookie?
Yeah, so we take a very proactive approach with the people that we work with, you know, in the various guises that we work. So we work with them with a dynamic floor pricing solution. We work with them with our SSP demands. We work with them with a wrap-up. But what we're always trying to do is engage our partners, and we're always showing them our internal reports, our internal testing. We give them the ability through our platforms to A/B test things as well. So a lot of the work that we've done around that, you know, whether it was different types of ID solutions, different types of attention metrics, we're constantly feeding that back to publishers. And we always take the approach that when we work with people, we want to be proactive, on the front foot, working with proactive publishers that want to actually engage in a new digital strategy or a digital strategy that is at the forefront. So that's really our culture and mantra, and that's what we try to implement.
Mm. And I'm also interested kind of more generally, like what is your focus, Opti Digital. You know, we talked a lot over the past three stories about all the different things that are happening in the industry, and a lot of those things massively impact the publisher. How are you working with them? Kind of what's your story about where the direction you guys are heading in, and how you are helping these publishers try and like come to terms with some of the challenges? Because there's a lot to navigate at the moment.
Yeah, it is. And I think the key thing to highlight again is we are a standalone ad tech provider. I think for us, we don't work with people and say, hey, you know, if you want to work with us, you have to rip out somebody else's code off the page and rip it up and start again. We are providing ad tech solutions that can augment and can, you know, be integrated into current stacks. You know, we sit very agnostically. So, you know, with our dynamic broad pricing solution, you know, that can be implemented just through anyone's, you know, Google Ad Manager. You know, we don't have any restrictions in who we work with. In fact, you know, we require, or for everyone to have really good results, you know, to have Prebid, to have Amazon, to have an AdX, so we can turn around and really, you know, maximize it to its full potential. And our Engage, which is our SSP solution, which is a Prebid adapter, it's the same thing. You know, we don't come along and say, hey, you need to use our wrapper or so. We say, here is our pre-bid adapter, plug it into your stack and see what we can do. And on this occasion, we're bidding on engagement metrics, on intention metrics. So what we're doing is something different to a first price auction. So in this scenario, what we're saying to people is, hey, look, we know that this is coming. You know, people are focusing on engagement and attention, using different levels of attribution. Here is a tool that actually bids on those factors. So we're trying to move with times and actually provide solutions that people can actually utilize. And again, with Engage, you know, we were testing and ensuring that it works well on Safari, Mozilla, or different browsers, and, you know, you testing different ID solutions or various other elements to ensure that we're actually getting the revenues nice and high. So we're constantly pushing those boundaries and providing that and feeding that back to our publishers that work with us.
And do you find that obviously with a lot of the back and forth and flip-flopping that's happened over the past few years, you know, cookies is one example of where, you know, there's been lots of kind of challenges that we've had to face. Do you find that it's really important for you guys as a business to kind of go, right, we need to just ignore all the noise and focus on this is what our publishers, our clients need from us. This is the direction we're going in. And whatever happens outside of that, this will still be relevant to us 5 years down the line.
Absolutely. So all of our products have got wonderful roadmaps that are encompassing different things. So again, you know, we've got a floor pricing solution that is already omni-channel. So it's, you know, we're prepped for app, we're prepped for video, we're prepped for display, you know, even the outgoing AMP pages, you know, it's compatible with that. And we're building for what is coming forward. And again, with Engage, able to be used on app, able to be used on display. So we're also looking at various other ways of getting it onto clients, whether it's, you know, server side or open RTB. We're looking at all of those for the future. And then we're building out and have got a wrapper solution, which is going to be offered as a SaaS solution to certain publishers that fit the remit. And again, it's going to be something that where they can use and plug in their seats and have what they need and use all the features that we have, or just pick and choose some of the features that we have. You know, even with our going back to our SSP, we have certain features that are coming out which, you know, won't ask people to change anything, but we'll be able to inject ads onto the page or have them in nice viewable spots and places to increase revenues. And it's something that the publishers can turn on and off depending on their needs. So we don't really try and force feed or push products onto our publishers. It's a choice for them to make, and it's that balance of what they want to do and achieve, really. You know, it's, you know, UX versus revenue always, I think, is the key driver on that one.
Yeah, of course. And I want to end asking you what your one piece of advice to publishers is in the current state of play in the industry. Kind of what's the one thing you want to put out there to them? Obviously, apart from work with Opti Digital, which is a given, I would like to think. Yeah. But what do you think your message to them is?
build out your digital strategy and find a partner that is going to hold your hand or grow with you at the rate that you want to grow at. I mean, I think for me, that's the most important thing. There's so much going on at the moment. And that could be multiple partners, but have a strategy at the forefront of your mind and trying to adhere to that and follow it through.
Brilliant. I feel like that's a very, very good way to end. Thank you so much, Matt. Thank you, Ollie, for joining me today. Great insights from both of you. Yeah, thank you for being guests.
Cheers.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.